You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 1st of March 2023 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, today I thought we'd take a look at some accusations of racism, and we've actually got three news stories to get through if we manage to get that far. And to start off with, we will look at an accusation that the countryside is racist. Where I live in Stroud, Gloucestershire, I feel privileged to have a gorgeous view of the valleys out of my bedroom window, stretching as far as the eye can see. It's a postcard perfect sea of green that looks just as beautiful in summer sunshine as it does on a frosty winter's morning. But as a person of colour, living in a rural area, many of the fields I can see feel off limits to me. A government review in 2019 found that I'm not alone in thinking this. Many black, Asian and ethnically diverse people reportedly view the countryside as an exclusive, mainly white, mainly middle class club. This is despite the 1942 Scott Report, which clearly stated that there must be facility of access for all in rural areas. So what is he saying here? Is he saying that black people are not allowed in the countryside? He's pointing out there's this report in 1942 saying there must be facility of access for all. Well, you can go to the parts of the countryside that are not privately owned. We have national parks. There's no sign on the national park saying no black people allowed. Anybody can actually go there. And I think most people, regardless of what ethnicity they are, see the countryside as being fairly exclusive, and you do tend to feel like you're a bit of an outsider if you come from a town. That's not because people are anti people of different colours. It's just because you get townsfolk and you get country folk, and they are different. And that is probably due to the fact that people that come from towns have different habits, different ways of living to people that come from the countryside. When you go to towns and cities, you tend to see that there's a lot of litter everywhere. And dropping litter is not the sort of thing that people do who are from the countryside. And that is the sort of thing that they see people doing that come from the city. So I would suggest that it's more likely that people in the countryside are concerned that somebody comes from a city more so than that somebody is a person of colour. And of course, because the cities are now multicultural, that is mainly where you tend to find black and minority ethnic people. So if somebody sees somebody black in the countryside, they're going to pretty much automatically know that they come from the city. And that's going to be the more important thing, I think, rather than the fact that somebody is from a different race. He says here that he feels as if these fields are off limits to him, but they're not off limits to him. If you're walking through a bridle path, you can walk through a field. But if it is a farmer's field of corn, then yes, it is off limits to him, but it's also off limits to white people. He says, in an attempt to challenge this perception of the countryside as an exclusively white area, the Independent Cinema Office and the Lux Arts Agency have commissioned a programme called Right of Way to show alongside archival shorts exploring the history of the national trails. My film, Black Strangers, follows my attempt to search for an 18th century namesake of mine, the mononymous Daniel, who was buried in nearby Nympsfield on 31st December 1719, and was described on records held in Gloucestershire archives as being simply a black stranger. And he's basically projecting onto that. He's projecting onto that the fact that people get called black today who are from Africa. Sub-Saharan Africans are called black people today. So he's projecting this term that we use today to refer to Sub-Saharan Africans as meaning the same back then. And of course, it didn't mean the same back then. You had the black prince. It could mean that somebody had black hair. It could mean that somebody wore black clothes. It could be all sorts of different things that it could actually mean, rather than it being descriptive of the person that is there. And the fact that if it was a sub-Saharan African, then it's saying here that he was a stranger. Obviously, not somebody that was indigenous to the country, somebody that had come there from somewhere else. So this claim that Britain has always been diverse and black people have always lived here in Britain, this shows that that is not true. That is, if this person was in actual fact a sub-Saharan African, why is it that the Independent Cinema Office is trying to challenge the perception of the countryside as being an indigenous British area? I mean, it's one of the few places that are left in Britain that is not multicultural. And that is, you can tell that from the census. So why is it that they're trying to portray this as not being so? Why are they trying to portray it differently, as if the countryside is multicultural, when the countryside is probably 99.9% white? I mean, why are they trying to challenge this perception when the perception is actually the reality? I mean, I get the idea that he likes the countryside, he wants to go to the countryside, but why does that automatically mean that they should start portraying the countryside as being different to what it is? He says, I made the film in the aftermath of my involvement with a council-led consultation in Stroud that, among other things, asked for people's opinions of an object in the town called the Black Boy Clock. Stroud's consultation drew media attention from outlets across the political spectrum and ignited a culture war debate. And we discussed this Black Boy Clock in an episode of Real Britannia a couple of years back. And the Black Boy Clock is just basically an anatomically correct black boy in a cast black boy that is a part of a clock mechanism. That's all that it is. But at the time, we had the Black Lives Matter protests, we had the lynching of the Edward Colston statue, and there was this big fervour throughout the country to try and find links to racism everywhere. And there was a group called Stroud Anti-Racists that were trying to get this clock banned, basically. And a Conservative MP spoke up about it and said that this is culture wars. This is ridiculous. The local people don't want to see their clock removed. Why are you complaining about it? Getting back to the article here, he says, this naturally dredged up the same tired arguments again and again, with comments such as, go back to where you come from, and stop stirring up trouble around here. So he's saying these are tired comments. And what you've got, basically, you've got new people that come into the area start demanding that the area be changed. And the logical response to that is, stop stirring up trouble around here. Or why don't you go back to where you came from if you don't like it here? And I mean, this go back to where you came from, or go back home. Why don't you go back home? This sort of thing that gets shouted at people, or allegedly shouted at people. And people think, well, my home is here. My home is in Britain. But what people mean by that is the family home. Go back. Why don't you go back to where your family came from? Because obviously there, you're not going to have these problems that you're having here, you're not going to experience racism if you go back to the family home, because the family home is exclusively made up of your people. I mean, that's why people say this sort of thing. They're talking about the family home more than anything else. And when people ask, where are you from? And they don't mean it in an insulting way. I mean, what they really mean is, who are you from? What family are you from? What is your extended family? What is your ethnicity? Is what people mean when they say, where does somebody come from? It's not meant as an insult. It's meant as a way for you to talk about your ancestors, to talk about your ancestry. That's what it means, rather than what geography are you coming from? And what people are saying here is, why would you come to the new area and then cause trouble in this new area? And I mean, that's rather like a microcosm of what's happened with immigration, isn't it? Over the last 70 years, we've had people come into the country from other parts of the world. They've basically been invited here by the government. They've been allowed in by the government. And then what they've sought to do is change the place that they have come to and say, well, it doesn't represent me. Well, of course it's not going to represent you, because you're not indigenous to this part of the world, are you? And the people that built up the country here come from a different extended family than your extended family. Well, it says here that these same tired arguments reinforce the outdated concept that people of colour don't belong in rural areas. But he said that the countryside doesn't really have that many black people in it. So it's hardly an outdated concept that people of colour aren't really living in the countryside. And that's what it means here. They don't belong in rural areas. Well, that's simply a way of saying, well, black people are usually found in the cities. They're usually found in suburban areas. And the reason for that is because they like the cities. It's not because they're found in the countryside and all the countryside folk have kicked them out of the countryside and forced them to live in the cities. It's because they like living in the cities. He says the official survey found that 79% of people thought the clock should be removed, with the words uncomfortable, ashamed and angry occurring most frequently when asked to describe it. Now, I've had a look at this survey, and it was a public survey. Anybody could answer it. And it was up there on the internet for, I think, 3 months. So it wasn't local people. It was people that didn't come from the area that were thinking that this clock must somehow have been racist. I can't see how it's racist. It's just an anatomically correct black boy. I mean, it just shows a fondness for black people more than anything else. If somebody makes a clock mechanism out of it, the little black figure comes forward and bongs a bell, basically, with a bell beater. You have cuckoo clocks, don't you? You have representations of cuckoos. Are they cuckooist? We have representations of people that come out of clocks, a weatherman and a weatherwoman that both come out in a clock mechanism. Well, there's a famous clock mechanism, King Wenceslas clock, I believe it is, in Prague with similar things. It's just something that we do with clocks. And when the subject matter of the clock is obviously something that the clockmaker is fond of. The clockmaker is not seeking to hate people for the colour of the skin by making the subject of the clock a black boy. Yet, apparently, because of this, people were uncomfortable, ashamed and angry, but they weren't the local people. They were the people from outside of the town that had been told about this through this Stroud Against Racism group. So he says, one of my earliest memories is going on a primary school field trip up to the local common for ice creams on what was probably the hottest day of the year, traipsing along footpaths and over bridges along the way. And at no point then did I feel out of place. And this is the truth. Country folk are very friendly. And so long as you're not dropping litter, making lots of noise, they're going to be friendly towards you. But if you're from a city, you're always going to feel a little bit out of place, because country people have different ways of doing things. They will say hello to the people they meet. They will greet the people they meet. If you come from a city, you try to avoid eye contact with the people that you meet, because you meet so many people. I think that's probably the reason for it. But there are just different ways of doing things. But as he says here, he did not feel out of place. But then he says, as I got older, I began to question my surroundings in the way that children do. And of course, if you are from a different ethnicity, you're going to start questioning your surroundings, because you're going to be in a multicultural area. You're not going to be exclusively amongst your own people group. So it's going to be a little bit weird. It's not all going to represent you. Whereas that is the way that things would be if you were living exclusively amongst your own people group. He says, but it was only when the consultation hit the headlines and the reactionaries started to rear their heads online that I properly doubted whether I belonged in the landscape I found myself living in. So I have to ask here, had he not sort of questioned before whether there was somewhere else in the world that was exclusively filled with his own people? I mean, what did he think? Did he think that where he was living in, that black people had always been there because he was just brought up there? I think he must have looked around and thought, well, there must be somewhere in the world that is just exclusively filled with black people, because I'm a minority here amongst these white people. There must be somewhere. But apparently he says he didn't think that. He says, luckily, finding Daniel in the archives squashed these concerns. He reminded me that people of colour have always existed in rural spaces and always will. But the whole title of this this person tells him that that's not true, doesn't it? I mean, if he believes that the person he was looking for is actually a sub-Saharan African, and yet the description calls him a stranger, then that's saying people of colour did not exist in the rural spaces because the record of them says it was a stranger. And he himself also talks about how he came here with the Windrush generation, or his parents came here with the Windrush generation. So he's not descended from this this Black Daniel that is recorded as being a stranger. So why is he telling an obvious lie here, pretending that that is so, when he knows it's not so? One of the threads that unites the commissions in the Right of Way series is a search for kinship in the outdoors, whether that be in friends and family, fellow ravers, or sadly departed forebears. Ufuoma Essi and Arjuna Newman have made films exploring the poetry of Jamaican activist Una Marson and the history of free parties, respectively. As filmmakers, we can draw people's attention to issues and hopefully start some conversations running alongside the vital on-the-ground work that groups like Flock Together and Black Girls Hike are doing in reclaiming rural areas and making them a welcoming place for people of colour. So he thinks what they're doing is they're trying to take back the countryside, which was apparently taken from black people. I mean, that's how you reclaim an area. It means that it was originally yours, or and you're taking it back. So he literally thinks that the British countryside was once filled with black people, and they got excluded and put into the cities, and now he needs to come back and retake these rural areas. And the way to do this is to pretend that these rural areas have always been full of black people. Why would somebody want to do this? He says, all of this action from all sides is key to changing the wider public's notions of who is entitled to call the countryside their home. And the answer, of course, is everyone. But that's not it, is it? It's not black African people's home. It's not their family home. They may be living in Britain at the moment, but their family home is where their family are from. That's the family home. I live in Wales, but it's not my family home. I just happen to live in Wales. And it's the same thing here. Why is it that he thinks that that he should be entitled to call the countryside home, i.e. his family home, when it wasn't built by his family? His family home is somewhere that was built by his family. That's the issue, I think. Why is it that they're trying to change these ideas and trying to falsify history and pretend that black people have always been here? It's very strange. And he obviously knows that that isn't the truth, because he says he came in with the Windrush generation. But yet he still tries to portray the fact that there was this black stranger, as it says here, that was buried in there some time ago. He still tries to portray it as if that's proof that black people have always been living in the countryside. Well, as I say, there's a another accusation of racism here that I want to take a look at. Race should be made a central part of the UK's independent public inquiry into the pandemic, campaigners say. A letter seen by BBC News sent to the chairwoman of the COVID-19 inquiry calls for it to look at racism as a key issue at every stage. I mean, you would imagine that an investigation into COVID-19 and what happened there, that they would look at the statistics, they would look and see that black people were more likely to catch COVID, and they would look for a biological reason for that. But no, they're saying what they have to do is look at racism as a key issue in every single stage. So instead of being an inquiry into the pandemic, they want it to be an inquiry into racism. Ethnic minorities were significantly more likely to die with COVID-19, according to official figures. And this is strange, because when we look at Africa, very few people actually died of COVID-19. And there could be various different reasons for that. A lot of African countries have the majority of the population are under the age of 30. They have a lot of young people there. And we know that young people were at least at risk. Africa tends to have a very hot temperature. So it's not likely that cold germs, COVID-19 germs, are going to be able to survive in a hot temperature. I wouldn't have thought. So there are various reasons why in Africa they didn't really have a problem with COVID-19. And what has happened here is, as they say here, ethnic minorities were significantly more likely to die with COVID-19 in Britain. I mean, it may be that that's because Britain is not their natural environment. Their natural environment is a water environment. We know that vitamin D is also involved in this somehow. And we know that black people don't get enough vitamin D when they're in Britain because they're used to being in an environment with more sunshine. But of course, when there's any difference like this nowadays, the only thing that it is acceptable to blame is racism. An inquiry spokesperson said the unequal impacts of the pandemic would be at the forefront of its work. So they are going to be looking at the fact that there are these differences in statistics, but they're just not going to be concentrating on trying to find ways that racism can actually be blamed for this. People from ethnic minority backgrounds who lost loved ones during the pandemic told BBC News they felt sidelined by the process so far. For those who've lost family members, this promise to look at inequalities generally doesn't go far enough. They believe ethnicity should be examined separately. So they're saying they're being sidelined, yet they're all being asked for what their views are on this. And it just seems that apparently all of their views are just concentrating on, can we find a way to blame racism for this? Lobby Anacola, whose father Femi died with COVID in April 2020 at the age of 60, said there is no way race couldn't have played a role in his dad's death because his father was a regular gym goer with no underlying health conditions, but he was at the age of 60, which means that he was more likely to die from this anyway. But Lobby doesn't think so. He says he was a black man in England, says Lobby of Leamington Spa, Warwickshire. Racism is pervasive in every aspect of life. My dad really highlights why it's so important to look at this as a systemic and structural problem because he did everything right. As a carer, Femi was a key worker. At the time, people from minority ethnic communities were statistically more likely to be classified as key workers, particularly in people-facing jobs that left them more exposed to the virus. So there we go. There's a reason why it might have happened, because he was over 60 and because he was in a job where that was people facing. Femi says it's racism. I mean, could it not actually be that he liked doing a job that was people facing? Could it be that black people like interactions with people? They like social interaction. They like to have jobs that are facing people. Could that not be the real reason for this? And according to Femi, it must be that his father was forced into this job because the employer just hated the colour of the skin. I mean, it's a ludicrous accusation. And there are all these other reasons for why it might be that people died from COVID. But he doesn't think so. He thinks it has to be racism. He says he was going to work with his winter gloves and scars as makeshift PPE. There is nothing more this man could have done to try and stay alive, Lobby said. And of course, white people died from COVID as well. And again, you have to look at the reasons why that might be. It might be that they were overweight. It might be that they were over 60. It might be that they had other comorbidities. I mean, what they're saying here is this guy didn't have comorbidities, but he was working with the public and he was over the age of 60. But that's not good enough for Lobby here. At a hearing on the 14th of February, the inquiry's barrister said looking at racism in the first part of the inquiry, which will examine how prepared the UK was for a pandemic, would be an impossible task. So it's not something that they're even going to be able to do. But you just know that these organisations, these anti-racist organisations, they're going to be making the accusation that it was racism was the reason why the organisation didn't look at racism, when there are obviously all these other reasons for why there was this discrepancy in the figures. Lobby wants stories like his father's to be heard in the inquiry because we've seen firsthand the consequences of racial inequality. As a black man from a black family, it feels like race and the impact that race had in the pandemic has also just been sidelined too. It feels like it's more of an afterthought than being a priority for the inquiry. Well, of course, the inquiry is into the pandemic. The inquiry isn't into racism. I mean, what we see here is people from races that are not white, they seem to want to just concentrate on race all the time. And yet when we as white people say, well, we would like to concentrate on race as well, of course, we just get accused of being racist for this. And, you know, all of these problems, they all come about from multiculturalism. There'd be no way that he could be looking at this and saying, well, there might be discrimination is the reason here for why my father died, if he lived in an exclusively black community. I mean, if he had a country that was just full of black people, and then his father died of COVID, then they wouldn't be able to say, well, it was racism that caused it. They would have to find other reasons. They would have to say, well, it was because he was old, because he was working with the public, perhaps because he was obese. But Lobby and the anti-racist organizations just do not want to accept that. I mean, it may just be that they're more susceptible to COVID-19. We know that they're more susceptible to prostate cancer. We know that they are pretty much the only people that get sickle cell anemia. COVID-19, they just may have a weakness to it that could be a part of their biology. But of course, you're not supposed to realize that there is actually a biological difference between people groups. You're supposed to think that we're all exactly the same. And if there are any statistical differences between groups, it must be down to racism. And that's certainly what this university lecturer thought. And she wasn't talking about structural racism or some statistical average that could be blamed upon racism. It seems she just wanted to blame racism for everything that happened to her. A black university lecturer sued the faculty for race discrimination because her nameplate on the door didn't have her doctor title on it. Of course, that must be down to racism. Can't possibly be down to just a simple mistake made by the people that made the nameplate for the door. It has to be racism. Among a series of alleged microaggressions, Dr. Christabel Peters complained that the plaque did not include her academic title, unlike her white colleagues at the University of Bristol. I mean, this just really highlights the fact that black people have been taught to think if anything happens that you don't like, it must be down to racism. It can't be down to anything else. And it's the media that is responsible for this. That's the mentality that the mainstream media encourages black people to have. The lecturer in American cultural and political history made a string of other racism allegations, including that her office furniture wasn't delivered and that her payslips were not put into her pigeonhole. Well, how did the deliverers know that she was black? I mean, Dr. Christabel Peters, you can't tell that somebody is black from that name. Yet she says because the furniture wasn't delivered, that must be down to racism. Because a couple of payslips were missed, that must be down to racism as well. Can't just be down to error. Dr. Peters also complained that a senior lecturer told her that nobody gives a shit about Africa when she pitched a research idea about the continent. A tribunal heard. Well, that may be true. I mean, maybe they wanted her to be doing investigations into something to do with America. I mean, she is a doctor of American culture and political history. So that was why she was hired. So I can imagine that if she then wanted to get money to do something in Africa, that people would complain about it. I mean, it's quite noble that she wanted to do something in Africa, and that really shows that it is her ancestry that she is most concerned with, rather than the geography, which is, of course, just natural, and it's the way that people should be. But we're told, no, our loyalty is to the geography where we live, rather than to our extended family. The academic suffered a stroke while in Portugal, and the university allegedly mistreated her while handling it. It was also heard. The lecturer, who is black, British, of Guyanese origin, has lost all her claims at an employment tribunal. You know, it's almost as if what she's done is just thought, well, I'll just try. You can't lose anything for trying, can you? I'll accuse them for racism, for everything that I can think of, and perhaps one of them they'll accept, and perhaps then I'll get a payout out of this. I mean, that's what it seems to me. At the week-long hearing in Bristol, in which Dr. Peters represented herself, I mean, she's certainly got some courage there, hasn't she? She's certainly got some belief in her own abilities to be representing herself. She brought claims of race discrimination, race harassment, victimisation and disability discrimination. The tribunal heard Dr. Peters join the university in September 2016 and placed an order for extra chairs and a coffee table so she could meet students, but it was delayed. And she had to pay for them. So she had to pay for them Herself, that must be racism that's the cause of that. She also complained that a title was not included on the nameplate on a door. And three times in 2017, her payslips went missing. So they went in the wrong pigeonhole, I guess. Dr. Peter said she was the victim of microaggressions, but the university said they were simply errors and the tribunal ruled in their favour. As I say, you know, she's probably looking at this and thinking, well, you've got to try, haven't you? You've got to try. If you can find any racism somewhere, we need to root it out. And I mean, this is good because there wasn't any racism here, but it doesn't mean that there isn't racism everywhere else. We just have to keep working hard at this. The tribunal found the nameplate issue was an admin error, that another lecturer had the same problem happen to him, and that the nameplates are often prepared by junior workers who do not even know what they look like. So this is the other issue. You just did these sort of things happen to white people at the university as well? Well, of course they did. But that hasn't stopped her saying that it was racism. The tribunal heard in September 2018, when Dr. Peters was making an application for a research project about Africa, a senior lecturer told her, "Nobody gives a fig about Africa." The comment had a marked effect on Dr. Peters, and she felt depressed by it. And the lecturer who made the comment was gutted he upset her, the tribunal heard. Well, it may be that he was just actually telling her the reality of it, and they weren't interested in Africa. They were interested in research on America or Britain, since that was what she had been hired for. The tribunal ruled that the university's handling of the incident was not motivated by race. After Dr. Peters suffered a stroke in December 2019 and did not return to work, she claimed bosses were pushing for her to take ill health retirement and that this was racist. She was having such a horrible time at the university, and there were all these racisms that were being done against her. I mean, perhaps they were just being sensible and saying, well, look, you're having a really horrible time here. There is the opportunity here for you to take ill health retirement. But no, she thought that was racist. However, the tribunal panel found the university was also considering how it could get her to return to work when she was fit and able. So the university were basically just trying to do whatever it was that she wanted to do. Dr. Peters, who eventually resigned in January this year, lost all her claims. A University of Bristol spokesperson said, "We are pleased the judge dismissed all claims made against us, finding no evidence of discrimination. This has been an incredibly challenging period for everyone involved, particularly the witnesses who have been offered our full and ongoing support." And it must have been difficult for them. You know, they're all being accused of being racist when the tribunal has found that there were no racists amongst them. "We are disappointed matters needed to be resolved through legal channels, as we know staff tried their very best efforts to support Dr. Peters and to address her various concerns. She has since left the university, and we wish her all the very best for the future." I mean, this really highlights it doesn't matter what you do, it's never going to be good enough. And that is because black people have been programmed to think that whatever bad things happen to them, it must be down to racism. It must be down to white people. And even if you didn't have that, there's always going to be this suspicion that something that's happened could have been down to discrimination. It could have been down to discrimination. And the only way to eliminate that is to do away with multiculturalism. And then there can't be any discrimination. And then people are not going to be thinking, well, that decision there may have been made on the basis that you don't like me because I'm black. People just wouldn't be able to think that. And that is the obvious solution to all of these problems. The university finished by saying, "We are committed to making sure that our university is inclusive for all staff and students, and that everyone feels they belong. We want the experience of studying and working here to be positive and welcoming for everyone. All concerns raised about discrimination are taken seriously and relevant action taken in accordance with our university policies." And this must have taken up a lot of time. You imagine she was putting in all these complaints about racism just when her nameplate wasn't quite right for her, when the deliveries of the office furniture didn't turn up on time, and she's complaining it's racism. And there must have been all these investigations that the university did into this, because they would have shown that to the tribunal and said, "Look, we investigated this and we didn't find any." And as I say, I mean, it just highlights the fact that if you're from an ethnic minority, you're always going to have a suspicion that something that happens to you may be down to racism. And it doesn't matter how much other races do to show that they're not discriminating. And the British government has found that there's no institutional racism in Britain. They have shown that. And yet people from ethnic minorities still think there is all of this racism. And they always will. You know, the only way to get rid of it is to stop multiculturalism. There's no racism that takes place in places that are exclusively black and minority ethnic. Racism just cannot exist there, can it? Because racism can really only exist when there are white people around. And this is why we say diversity just means replacing white people. And it appears they won't be happy until all the white people are gone. You know, we have this concept of whiteness. We're told whiteness has to be eliminated. And I'm sure a lot of the people that are saying that, they just mean it as it's an ideology, and they don't mean actually get rid of white people. But that's the way it comes across. So it's the same for white people. You know, we have this fear that black people and other ethnic minorities, they're trying to replace us. They're trying to do away with us. They're talking about whiteness. And then on the other side, you've got black people saying, well, there's all this microaggressions against us. There's all this fear that it doesn't say doctor on my door because the people are being racist. Everybody just has this fear that they're being discriminated against. None of that can happen if you don't have multiculturalism. All you need to do is set up ethnically homogenous communities and you would solve this problem immediately. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk radio for the nationalist community.